Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust, Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Welcome back to another episode of the Street Alpha Podcast. I am your host, Tukes. And we are in Sydney, Australia. We are here for GTR Festival. Huge shout out to Andrew for flying me out to make this happen. So we're going to have a ton of great interviews out here in Australia. We're going to have some legends of the RB platform on the podcast as well. But today we have a person who supplies a lot of the parts for those legends. So today we are at Herman's studio, which it isn't 100% complete yet, but we had to make do with what we had. He had his stuff set up already for GTR Festival, so we were able to use it for the background. We put up some of his banners and stuff, so we made it look the best we could just to make this happen. So it's currently 8 o'clock in the morning, New York time, and currently what? What time is it now? 10 o'clock? 11?
It's 10 o'clock.
Yeah, 10 o'clock. So I am wired right now. Jet lagged, got off the flight this morning, and now we're here. So before we start, let's give a round of applause to Herman of PRP.
Thank you very much.
Clap, 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 clap. Yeah, got it. So you were on the podcast before. We actually did our podcast at T1.
I was on the podcast with Andrew's mouth.
Yes. It was Andrew's podcast. But the energy between you guys is pretty funny.
Yeah.
It's great. It's always great. Now, you're doing a lot with parts now, right? A lot has changed since last year, I'm sure. A lot of things changed since last year, since you're developing more parts for the RB platform and other platforms as well.
Yeah.
So how hard has it been for you to kind of migrate or continue to migrate into the US market with your parts?
America has been obviously a big push for us, and
yeah.
We started going 4 or 5 years ago, and last year we did, I think, most of the events, PRI, the SEMA, there was, you know, we're at World Cup Final, TX2K.
Yeah. Yep.
It's a lot to cover, and because we've got so many events here, because
right.
Australia, we're racing every weekend. There's some type of test and tune, or there's a roll racing or an event or a jamboree or a GTR festival or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to divide the time to know where you're going to get the best result. I mean, I think 2 weeks ago we were in Melbourne for Motorex. So,
yeah.
Adrian Portelli put some new energy into that. And then said, are you coming to GTR Festival? He's like, yeah, I'll come. It's like there's always something happening in a week or two. And we've got GTR Festival New Zealand, I think, next week or the week after.
Yeah, it's pretty short.
Yeah.
Yeah, to this one. So, I didn't even realize that, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot happening, man.
That event you guys were at, that was Motorex, right?
Yeah.
You guys unveiled the June 3 car.
There was June, like a June 3 was there, yeah.
Yeah, and then there was another car that, I see you guys in Australia, but the and there was VL. Another car. Yeah,
yeah,
that car looks pretty.
George's VL, gorgeous car. It's a pro
sick.
Mod, but beautiful car.
You have a lot of involvement with the pro mods as well?
We just have involvement with all of the
everything,
RVs.
Right?
Yeah, because they're all getting our dry sumps and, you know, our ignition systems and whatever. You know, there's a lot of stuff that gets done for a lot of builds, and we do a lot of special parts that people don't find out about because it's not mainstream sort of parts. But
right.
We make a lot of flywheels, flex plates, mid plates, you know, engine mounts. We do all sorts of weird and wonderful things for circuit cars and pro mod drag cars. So
you guys mostly do a lot of RB stuff, not only, but you do other platforms as well.
Yeah.
But how are you guys competing with the other companies that are already providing parts for those other platforms?
Look, when we enter the market with a new product, it's like we always do well, especially if it's an engine that we're familiar with, right?
So right.
We've been doing a lot of JZ stuff lately. We're about to do a whole heap more. Evo 4G63, it's like once you start, it's like it's a drug because our stuff has a certain look and a certain color range and they all seem to go together. And you'll see that if you put it with another branded product, the other branded product doesn't have the right contours. It doesn't have the right shape. So we kind of make it hard enough to make that it can't just be copied because it's too expensive. You need expensive machinery. But also it's like you do a bit and it's like, that looks awesome, but now that bit looks shit. And that bit. And it's like, and it's contagious.
Right.
So we try and carry that along. But America has been great to us, really lovely people, accommodating. We've got a lot of fans and a lot of support. And then Trump, it's like, what are you doing, man? Make up your mind.
It's been so much controversy with all of that. It's been kind of hectic the past, I would say, month or two? 2 months now. Yeah, I would say 2 months.
Yeah, that's, and it's up and down like a yo-yo. It's like 100%. It's like 125. No, it's going to be 30. It's 15. It's like, man, what is it? There was 25 and then 25 again if it was in billet raw aluminium parts or something. Well, that's kind of us.
Yeah.
And then if it's automotive, you got to pay another 25. It's like 50% increase. How do we cover that?
Yeah.
So the first one, we sort of absorbed a lot of it, included shipping in the freight and sort of, okay, we're going to make, this is okay.
Right.
And then we thought, we'll just let the dust settle and then another 25. So you know what? We'll just wait because we don't know.
Yeah.
A couple of our customers had been hit with 25% and they had to argue it.
Oh, wow.
And then everyone else seems to just be going through at the moment because there's a 90-day pause. So I don't know what's going on.
So now is it officially 10%?
The last I heard, it was going to be somewhere between 10 and 15%, but unofficial, but it's still on a 90-day pause.
Yeah.
But we also considered at the, okay, this is going to be 25% or 50%.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're going to have to manufacture in America, but because we make 1,000 parts on our listing, are different parts that make up different combinations for kits. It's a lot to try and manufacture overseas without the control of all my staff here. It's like it'd be nearly impossible for us to do. So we thought, you know what, we'll just buy raw billet from the States, and then we're sort of buying at least the raw material from America, but it's 10 times the price because it's not there yet. So right, it's like, you know what? We just chill our jets a little bit and see how we go.
But I think the plan with that is obviously to try to keep things in the U.S. so that other markets have to come to the U.S. to get stuff where we can make our own stuff in the States.
Yeah.
Now, do you think that's going to be something that happens more often now because of this situation?
Man,
I mean, you're already purchasing from the U.S. to make this parts happen.
And we also already buy a lot from the U.S. You know, Kinsler, we daily ATI, you know, there's a heap of stuff that we buy. We support each other. I know that China was the biggest problem. So for China, it doesn't really affect us too much. We can still import from China from stuff that we need, but there's not a lot really, you know, some injection molding stuff, but for us it's fine. But into America, I guess if it makes the US self-produce and also buy off other countries, because Australia is such a small exporter as far as, you know, the scale of—
Right, in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, man, it's inconsequential to the better part. So will it help us sell more to the US? Well, probably. And I mean, is it going to be good for your country? Well, I hope so, because we want America to do well.
Right.
And the greenback, the whole world's based on it. So it's like, you know what? I'm not a politician and I'm not about to start giving a political view. Is it going to be a good thing? Look, I'm sure it'll all work out and we'll still be here.
Do you think it's a bad thing that a lot of things are manufactured in China? Because see, people have this misconception that just because it's from China, it means it's bad, right? It would make more sense to go to them to purchase.
Yeah, I mean, look at an Apple iPhone. They're probably all made in China.
Right.
And there's core parts that are made in China, investment cast parts, some particular housings for turbos and manifolds and stuff. It's like China is an industry leader in a lot of electronic platforms and a lot of casting. And anything with a high labor rate is cheaper.
Right.
But they went through a huge industrial revolution and they obviously beat Japan at doing what they do, and there was Taiwan for a while, and now it'll probably end up being India. Because they've got the population and they can work for a lot of money, and the cost of living is cheap there.
Right.
So to industrialize, and a big company can go in there, hire a bunch of staff, train them, tool them, all of a sudden you've got another manufacturing mega power.
Yeah.
So who's going to do it, and how long will it take before India catches up? Look, I don't know, but a lot of stuff gets made in China, and a lot of core parts that make up bigger parts get made in China. So I don't think we're really realizing the brunt of how big this situation is. I'm not going to say it's a problem. It's definitely a problem to a lot of people, but it's I don't think it hasn't been worked out yet. And it'll change and evolve 1,000 times. Who knows where we'll end
up?
But
right.
Yeah.
So now what is your biggest seller in all the parts you make, right? What platform? I'm assuming it's RB, right?
It's RB.
Okay. So out of all the RB parts, what do you sell the most?
Look, if it was a monetary value, it'd be a different than a number, you know?
Okay.
I think dress-up washers, we sell lots of them. We make 30,000 at a time. Coil brackets, you know, cam gears, we sell a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
But our diffs, drive lines, dry sumps, and axles, and soon-to-be tail shafts, it's like that stuff selling really well, and they're big ticket items. Like I think for GTR Festival, I don't know how many rear ends we did, but you know, Matuk ordered a bunch, CRD, you've got B2R, like all the big shops.
Yeah.
JMA in Melbourne, like there's, I don't know if there was maybe 7 or 8 complete rear end setups that you're talking Australian dollars, you know.
Right.
13, 14 grand each. So it's good because we kind of need to turn over a shitload of money just to get by, especially moving all of our workshops into a bigger one at the moment. We've got some media coverage of that coming. But, yeah, life's hard with all of that. So we just have to push and sell our little asses off, and thank God for events like this and the supporters that we've got, that we can sort of keep selling the way we do manufacturing to try and keep up with all of this demand. It goes hand in hand, and to develop them quickly for cars that are racing in the top level and then quickly bringing it to market, lifetime warranty with all our stuff. It's like, yeah, people, they're like, you know what, if they get it wrong the first time, which most often now we're pretty right. I mean, Jun 2 is still the fastest GTR in the world with our first dry sump we ever made. We're getting it pretty right pretty quickly, but we need to bring things to market very quickly. And I was just saying, lifetime warranty with our stuff.
Yeah.
You break an axle in 8 years, we'll replace the axle. It's like, who else in this game, in a performance game with big power parts, gives a lifetime warranty? So we're backing ourselves here.
Right.
We're supporting all the events. We're trying to do everything for everyone as much as we can. So, yeah, when people sort of support us back, even if it's buying a T-shirt or coming to an event or buying some parts or building a GTR, or you know what, buying a sticker, man, it all helps. It's all working itself out.
Yeah. Yeah. So, guys, it is raining pretty bad right now. So if you guys do hear that rain,
it doesn't look too bad on the thingamajig.
Yeah, it'll be fine. But if they do hear it, it's fine. So now, how big is the RB market based on how much you're selling? Because is it more popular here in Australia, or are you getting a lot of sales in states too?
I think anyone building a GTR or an RB in America or the rest of the world, I mean, I think we're getting a lot of that business anyway. We export probably 40% of what we make to America. Is it 35-40%? And the rest of the world is probably 10%. So, yeah, half of what we make, we export.
Yeah.
Most of it, I'd say 85% would be RB stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, America is buying a lot of this stuff because they are just starting to realize now that it's just, you know, it's better than the JZ.
So, you know what's funny about that? I feel like a lot of people think that RB people are delusional, right? Now, you say this, you don't really say it like in all seriousness. You say this as kind of like a joke.
Yeah, but I'm really joking so people don't get upset, because it's fucking better. It's way better. It's way more efficient, and it sounds better. It's just a better engine. I'm sorry.
You are being serious.
I'm being serious, man. I do it with a smile because I know there's going to be people hating on it, but you know what? The RB is just better.
Okay. We had a conversation earlier at lunch, right?
Yeah.
We're going through all the records that the RB has, right? Compare it to the 2JZ. So are you familiar with what record is for the 2J?
Yeah. Well, it's a PMS car. The Puerto Ricans built Natty Racing.
Right, Natty Racing, yeah.
And that ran a 5.54.
Okay, 5.54. That set the import record as well.
It is the import only. Record as
and,
well.
And 2J, correct?
And a 2J.
Okay, now what is the record for the RB?
The RB is Rob Marjan's 5.67.
5.67.
It's a tenth and a bit slower, but...
But it's still... That's 5.67. That's still
pretty fast. Yeah, but look, let me give you an example. And I know Rob Marjan's bringing out another car because Zeus is heavier than Lenatti.
Okay.
Lenatti's a nice car. So Murad built Big Mac with PMS.
Okay.
And Matuk's boys, we were all over there. And that car without nitrous is running a... That last podcast came out. The last one, it just ran a 5.79. Within a week of being at the track. So we were there for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
We stuffed around with the car for a week. And then the whole week at the track, we did not get one single complete run without either getting sideways or misfiring or some other issue. It was a disaster. But we're still only 0.2 off the record with an incomplete run. Heaps more power. We were down 20 pounds because we couldn't get boost in order. It wasn't getting ram boost at the end of the track. And we never really got through fifth gear properly. So the data was good for a high 5.9. Now, that's at that power.
Yeah.
With another 20 pounds, I mean, you're talking high fours, 5.49 around there because the car's lighter. And it's like, it's there. We did it all on one engine.
Okay.
I mean, yes, Lenatti did it all on one engine as well, but the Americans have had a long time to get that 2J right. So if we did a year's worth of racing in a week, because we did a lot of passes, and the RB sounds better than the 2J, it makes more power, efficiently. It's like, man, we did it without nitrous. Okay.
So there was no nitrous on that pass?
Nothing, not even to get it on. And like Lenatti had a shot of nitrous. It's like, hang on a second. We raced the car for a week.
Yeah.
We did it in America with a car from Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
We got it all together in another country to go and try and break the RB and then have a go at this record.
Right.
I'm confident that if we didn't have that misfire issue, we would have been close. We would have at least got the RB record. And then, you know, it's not going to take a lot more to get that import record. The guys at PMS that built Lenatti, they saw what Lenatti had to offer with a 2J.
Yeah.
Eric and Chucky, they now know that the RB and Abraham the tuner that right? Shane T was there. It's like, all right, this car's fast. Is it going to beat Lenatti? Everyone's like, well, without doubt, it's going to beat Lenatti. So it's like, we know we've got it. We just got to prove it.
Oh, I just feel like nobody's really talking about it, though.
No, but they should be talking about it.
Nobody's talking.
It's coming. Hey,
that's the biggest thing.
The war's here.
Everyone always says, oh, well, when has an RB ran 5 seconds? Or let me know when an RB's in the fives.
Man, there's heaps in the fives.
Really?
There's heaps already. I mean, Rob Marjan's, I don't know how many five-second passes he's run. But, you know, George is building a new car. That VL and Jordan 3, that will run a five.
You think it'll run a five?
Yeah, man, that thing's gonna run a five for sure.
Yeah, but that's on a radio. Is that a 275?
That's a 275.
Yeah. So what's the record for it on a 275 for the RB?
Jordan 2 would be a radial in a GTR,
right?
But for an RB, it's bipolar running a 633. Now that's a stock chassis car with IRS. It's not a tube chassis car running a low 630. Now, I saw that thing get crossed up over the line and he was backing off 50 meters before the finish line, pulling chutes because he busted a rear main oil carrier and it spat the rear main all over the rear tires and the car was sideways
at
200
scary.
And something mile. Like that car had data for a 6.15. Now that was on the way to beat White Rice then at TX2K went nuts and did that 6.09, 6.08, something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, that's fast, but you're only talking a tenth in front of a car that's a stock chassis car without a lot of tube work at all.
And that's by choice, right? That's because he wants to keep the car more of like a street car.
Sure. But he wants to do it with a stock chassis car. And now White Rice, as far as I know, it's a four link rear end with a 9-inch. And it's a tube chassis or half hybrid tube chassis car. It's like, we're there, man. We're barking at the door. It's clear. Yeah. The Aussies are coming with the RB.
I think that, let's say even if the record does get broken, right, in the States with the RB, I feel like people just don't, it's almost like they just don't care.
Well, that's why we started bringing the GTR Festival
to
America, so that Americans could hear that thing. And like, it's when we were racing with Big Mac over there in Bradenton, it's like when people were there, they're like, fuck is this thing, man? That sounds insane. Why is the exhaust on the wrong side? And it's like, man, it's an RB. And I go, sorry, what? That's an RB. It's like, it's a funny way of saying JZ. It's an RB. Yeah, it's a Nissan RB. And they're like, nah.
Because nobody drag races those.
You know? And it's like, I thought these things were unreliable. I go, well, we just did passes. Yeah. I mean, it's there, man. It's coming.
So people didn't even realize it was an RB. They thought it was a TJ.
Never seen it, never heard of it. Or just the, really, this thing? It's, you're not having oiling issues? It's going, brother, we sorted that shit out 10 years ago, you know? So it's coming. But the more that Americans start getting into the RB platform, because all the workshops in Australia are sending engines to America. Mm-hmm. Like, it's coming. The Americans will get that tech, and they will beat the Australians with that tech, because they've got the population, they've got money, and all you need is perseverance. I mean, it won't be long. There's people building RBs everywhere. That's what we want. We wanted to expand that market into America.
Right.
And, you know, there's 700,000 LSs there. It's like 700 million of the fucking things. They're everywhere. They're like here, they're in every Commodore. It's like, well, you know what? We've got a six-cylinder sport compact engine that with 3 liters or just over, we're making 3,000 horsepower. It's 1,000 horsepower a liter. I mean, you don't see a 6-liter or 7 or 8-liter LS-based platform making 8,000 horsepower or 6,000, 4,000, 3,000, those things. You know, it's like, man, it's the power per cubic inch is unrivaled in the JZ and the Honda B Series and the K Series and the RB. They're all in a little group together. It's like they're making
pound for pound.
They're making 500 horsepower a cylinder.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. And
it's pretty good.
100%. You had mentioned before that you set the driver up on the left side of the car.
Yeah.
Right? So what is the reason for that as opposed to having a...
Yeah, a lot of people ask that. Here we drive on the right-hand side of the car.
Right.
But when we set up a Pro Mod in Australia, we do it on the left, because the car engine spins clockwise. It picks up the front left wheel and it does a wheelie on the front left wheel. So you want to put the weight on the left-hand side of the car to settle the left-hand side of the car down.
So this is just something that you picked up, obviously, from experience, because...
Yeah, I mean, like all the Pro Mods in Australia have been, even door slammers and stuff, it's always been set up on the left. Usually, I'll admit, because old chassis were getting bought out of America and getting repurposed here.
Ah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, but then when you think about it, it's like, hang on a second. I mean, I remember even the conversation with Extreme GTR. That car needs the weight on the left and the driver's on the right. It's like, so Michelle's like, do we just rip everything out and put it on the left? Because in Australia, most of the tracks go left, right? There might be in Eastern Creek, for example, like 10 of the turns are left-hand turns or whatever it is, 9 of them, whatever. And there's a couple of rights, but you're always doing the damage to the outside right tire, the front right.
Right.
Because of all of that weight. So it's like, okay, well, if we put the driver, it's 100 kilos with all the bull crap on the other side of the car. It's like you're taking a lot of weight. It's an exponential weight curve off that front right, and you're moving it away, which will help it run longer with a semi-slick. Before it went to a slick tire, because now I think it's allowed to run in a Pro-Am or whatever category it's in. It's in a slick tire, and it's not going to stop. It's going to stop popping those tires.
You had also mentioned something about exhaust gases.
Yeah, well, we learned that with the Pro-Mod. It's you don't realize it, and the boys from PMS and My mate Shane T, it's like the car was steering to the right. And they're like, man, this thing's pulling right hard every pass. Like, what's going on? And like, hang on a second. It's all set up now. We set it up to go sort of left because the JZ's got the exhaust on the right-hand side. So now we've set it up to go straight and it's pulling right like a lot. It's like the exhaust on the other side, and now it's like, so we've got to undo what we do for the JZ and then do it on the other side. And it all sort of started making sense when the boys twisted the exhaust to go straight up and the car then went straight.
So because just off of that simple change of having the exhaust straight up.
Yeah, because they've got it angled back because you want the propulsion to go forward.
Right.
But it comes out on an angle. So it pushes the car to the right. So they tipped it up and it held the front end down and the car went straight. It's like, all right, well, we've really got to compensate for that and make the thing go left, steer left, and the exhaust will keep it straight. And it's like they did their calculations. The suspension guy, Chucky and Eric, and, you know, they got the clutch dialed at the same time. It didn't take them more than three passes to work it out. But once the car started going straight, it's like, man, this thing really moves a lot of air. It's like you're cruising down the freeway and there's a big gust of wind and you can feel the car move, especially if you're in a van or something.
Yeah.
It's pushing the vehicle to the right.
To the opposite direction of where it's facing.
Yeah, just from the sheer amount of flow. I mean,
now, that could be at any power, or is that more apparent 50, at like higher horsepower because you're pushing
you more? Notice it more with 3,000 horsepower, but even 1,500 horsepower and 50 pounds.
3,000 horsepower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all exaggerated. But yeah, even with half the boost, 50 pounds, because we're running 100 pounds, half the boost, you know, half the power, you'd argue that it's half that. So yeah, it's a lot.
Jeez. Oh, that's a lot. I think at that level, at the highest level, you kind of notice things like that because you're trying to get those times down for sure.
And maybe all those Hondas that you see with the exhaust coming out of the bonnet or the hood.
The hood, yeah.
Maybe that's helping with that. I
keeping
mean,
keeping the car, the front end down.
Oh, I thought it just looked cool in America.
Think about that.
You know what? I don't know. But the front wheel drive car, maybe you want to keep the front down.
Didn't think about that. But yeah, you're right. It probably helped keep the front down. I don't know if there's any... That's like the actual reason for
it. Hey, I'm just speculating, but if there's a Honda guy out there that knows about this, put it in the comments.
No, that's a very good point. I didn't think about that. Very, very good point.
I spend way too much time thinking about stuff I shouldn't be thinking about.
Yeah. Now, you have this RB cast block and head that you're developing. That's probably why a lot of people want to watch this podcast, I'm sure, too. They want to see what's going on with that, right?
Yeah.
You've been developing this for how long? When did you start this whole project? Four or five years ago. That was just like drawings and figuring stuff out, or
so many times we've done it again and thousands of hours, and we bought the billets to do billet heads. And look, I'm not saying that you can't get a billet head to work, but the amount of effort that you've got to put into a billet head to get it to work, and then it's still a week to machine it. It's like, man, I wanted to do high volume heads that we can just spit out. And the only way to do that effectively is casting them. And obviously with a cast, think about it, 3,000 horsepower and we're running a 5-6 quarter mile. Not efficiently because we keep cracking heads, but with a standard head, we're already making 3,000 plus horsepower.
That's cast.
That's cast standard.
Damn.
It's like all we need to do is fix a few of the areas where they lack, and we fixed a lot of the areas. We feel we've engineered something that's absolutely bulletproof, and it'll get us to 5,000 horsepower.
Yeah,
because that's a personal goal of mine, 5,000 horsepower.
Really?
Yep.
That's a long-term goal.
No, it's like give me a year or two, we'll get there.
5,000 in the RV.
Yeah,
dude,
it's possible.
That's crazy. I'm not saying it's not. It'd just be that'd be wild.
We'll make it happen. Somehow.
Now, you think it could be done with your new cast?
The cast head, yeah.
Just the head?
Well, the head's the problem.
Okay.
Because you can run a billet block, our cast block, or whatever. I mean, our cast block's probably a bit heavy for top-end racing.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, if you've got 5,000 horsepower, who cares?
Yeah, right.
My car's heavy? Yeah, it doesn't matter. Just give it another 10-pound of boost.
So why is the head the problem?
The head cracks. So you can't port a head to get an efficient flow through it, because the more you port it, the weaker it becomes, and you crack it near instantly. So a lot of the big guys, Matuk and CRD, it's that they're not doing a full-on port job to the head because they crack so quickly. Once we can then modify the head and have a big port and a big valve, all of a sudden we're then the sky's the limit again. JZ's also cracking heads, and we're working on a head for that as well. Because, look, we do still love the JZ. We might bag them out, and that might not be as good as the RB. But, you know, we are making a head, because the problem is we're going to make the RB whip the JZ. We have to help the JZ keep up with the RB. In fact, we want the JZ to beat the RB so that then we can put more effort into beating the JZ again. And it's going to be like the competition and racing is what it's all about. What's what I'm passionate about. So
yeah,
it's like, I want to help the loser. It's like, good, get that guy.
You're going
it's
up
like,
against
yeah, him. We won. And then I'll be on the us. Yeah, you lost, but now we're going to help you get that piece of fuck that guy. You know, it's like, yeah, I want to be there. I want to be in the loser circle as much as I want to be in the winner circle, because I want to help the loser beat the winner. And then, and we're all friends at the end of the day, and it's what it's all about.
Right.
So yeah, I think we can make 5,000 horsepower with the RB platform. And you know what? We'll just keep running engines until something breaks, and then we fix the bit that breaks, and then we'll get there eventually, man.
So when are we going to see these long blocks be sent out, or are people going to be using them?
Yeah. So look, the RB block releases this weekend at GTR Festival.
It releases for people to purchase?
We still have a backlog, but we have been shipping out orders. Mm-hmm. And at the moment, the backlog is probably 3 months, maybe four. But because we only ever took a $100 deposit, we're calling people and saying, hey, man, are you ready? Oh, whoa, I still need the rest of the engine. I'm not ready, but let me know on the next batch, or can I let you know what I'm ready? Yeah, no worries. Your spot's in the queue. We then give it to the next guy. Mm. So at the moment, we're only about halfway through the list of people that have been waiting for blocks.
Right.
Everyone's been great, and maybe one in 10 has been sort of canceling. Oh, I already bought a billet block, or I rebuilt my old engine, but everyone else is like, yeah, thank God, this is the best thing that's happened.
Yeah.
And we're taking orders, and yes, we're doing a complete engine. We can do a dyno-tuned run-in engine. You want 1,000 horsepower, 1,500 horsepower. That's what the other half of this studio is going to be, temporary engine building before the big engine build shop happens. So you can buy a short motor, a long motor, a complete engine, a running engine, a tuned engine, whatever you want. But it's like every engine shop in Australia would be backlogged with RBs at the moment anyway.
Yeah.
So we will get there, but the sky's the limit. So yes, if you go and pre-purchase a complete block at retail,
yeah,
it won't be long before probably halfway through the list, it's like, hang on, this guy hasn't paid yet. This guy is still making it. You know what? Give it to that guy. So it might only be 8 weeks before you start getting.
Depending on what.
We're just going to. We'll just keep punching them out. We can do at least 10 blocks a week.
And no, the cylinder my next heads. Question, yeah.
Yeah. 10 blocks, I think, at least before we step up manufacturing with more casting cores. And then with the cylinder head. Man, we tunnel bored it all today with our new tooling.
Yeah.
That's because with that block, just so you know, you don't add machining on it. It comes basically done. The tunnel's done. It comes fitted with a brace if you buy that option.
Yeah.
It comes bored. You just have to hone it and you're building that thing. So that's it. That's minimal. Like there's no year waiting for a tunnel bore.
Yeah.
It's like, you know how long it takes to get stuff machined. You know, and usually, you know what I mean? And it's like you buy an RB block, you need it's an N1 or RB30. You've got to fit a brace to make it four-wheel drive.
Right,
you've got
right.
to tunnel bore it. You're changing the main studs, so you're going to tunnel bore it anyway. Mm-hmm. And then the decks, you know, you machine the deck, it's all done beautiful. You machine the deck, and it's like it's cracked there. You've just wasted $10,000, $12,000.
Yeah. That's why everyone's doing the 30.
And they're just as bad now. They're starting to get – I can't find them anymore that aren't stuffed. You sonic test them and it's like you'll have 2.5 millimeters somewhere on a block. Mm. They're terrible. Ours is a consistent 8 millimeters at 86.5 wall section. It's like 3 times better than the average RB, and they're harder. So we're very confident with it, which is obviously why we've made the block the way we've made it, but it's also got a thicker deck, and we fixed all of the issues, bigger drain backs, a plethora of information there that you need to absorb. But the cylinder head now, it's just about done. I'd say another week or two and we'll be full production with that as well. And a lot of people want to wait for the head. So it's like, you know, as long as you've got an order in on something, we'll make it work. But yeah, we'll be punching them out and trying to keep everyone happy.
And are you still dyno testing it, or are you still like letting people like what's the testing process for this? Like, how does that work? You guys are still machining?
We dyno tested the block and head several times. We're about to start it up again, but we're already well exceeding the numbers that people are sort of wanting to do their builds at. So it's like, you'll be fine. And there's no reason why it won't make a whole heap more power. We just have to go and prove that. But we've got some, you know, 3-liter combinations that we're about to start testing with Callies and Italian rods and pistons. We've got some new, you know, stroker with taller deck type combos. We're going to go and give them hell. There's a 2,000 horsepower setup that you saw today.
Yeah.
With that big Garrett turbo that we're going to go and try.
This thing is crazy.
Yeah, man. With a Plasma Man 8-inch cooler, and it's full on. So we're, as soon as GTR Festival's over, I'd say we'll be in the dyno room finishing off that video and proofing the last ported version of the cylinder heads. Mm-hmm. We've got a few back-to-back scenarios to tick the boxes. And then it's like, yeah, we're good to release.
I feel like people are more comfortable now with the RB30 platform that it's kind of like, why would you want to go to a 26?
Well, the thing is now, because everyone's going for a, up until now, mm-hmm. it's a stroker RB30 block and they do an RB32.
Yeah. You know? Or you can leave it RB30.
Or leave it RB30.
Yeah.
But now with our 2.6, because it's a standard deck block, you don't have to modify the engine bay to suit it. All your pipework, everything fits. It's a short deck engine. We can now give you a 90 millimeter piston on a 2.8 crank. You've got 3 liters. But the 3 liters is not the RB30 sluggish 3 liter doesn't want to rev crap. It's a 2.8 crank with a big piston. It revs to 11,000 RPM if you want. It sounds epic. It's like you've got an RB30 now in a 2.6 block. Sure, we can't give you 3.2.
Yeah.
But man, an RB30 that revs like a 2.8, man, I'd call that better than the 3.2 anyway. Yeah, you're going to lose a little bit of, you know, some of that bottom end torque. But, man, you've got an engine that makes 1,000, 1,500 horsepower and it sounds like a 2.8 and it's got the torque of an RB30. It's like tick, 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 I'll have one of them.
Yeah, because I think a 26 or even a 2.8 sounds better than an RB30.
It just absolutely got that, it does. Yeah. The stroke comes into it. The smaller the stroke, the more it wants to rev. A 2.6 will just rev like hell.
Is it? So is it the revs though?
It's the stroke is
that makes it sound like that? Because I don't know. Like
it's the RPM that makes it sound, and it's how quickly it gets there as well.
That might be it then.
Yeah, I remember talking to Matt Longhurst that does well. Time Attack, he was running a Blue 34 at the time, mm-hmm. and it's like you can do a whole season on 10,000 RPM, no problem in a World Time Attack car. Or you can go through another engine or two at 11,000. And it's like, why don't you just run it at 10,000? Have you heard it at 10,500, 11,000? It's it's sex, man. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So that extra 1,000 RPM, I mean, it sounds wicked. And in a drag car, yeah, you can rev your RB32 to 11. I mean, CRD revs some of those things to 11.5 and Matuk engines. I've seen the things go 11, but it's not for a long time. You can't go and do laps around Eastern Creek or World Time Attack at 11 grand in a 3.2. You'll do it in a 2.6 or a 2.8.
Yeah.
So it just depends what you want. But for a nice street car that sounds epic and you can take it anywhere and send it to the moon as often as you want with a dry sump, a short deck engine's the way to go. And personally, I've always loved a 2.6 or a 2.8. They're epic, man. So that's what we've sort of engineered. And I think it's going to cover most of the bases.
And you think that's going to be able to still compete with the 2J market?
Yeah, man.
Even with the 2.6?
Absolutely. Because a 2J, I mean, they don't want to rev. Sure, you can get it to rev to 10, but it's limited, right?
Right.
$7,500, those things are over. It's like,
yeah,
you know, they don't want to rev. Eight, you can pull 8,500 RPM, but it doesn't love it.
Yeah.
The RB, it's like, it's still pulling, man. Yeah. So you have this huge power band, you know. People say, I want 1,000 horsepower in a GTR. It's like, have you driven 1,000 horsepower? Oh, my buddy's got 1,000 horsepower Supra. It's like, all right, let's go for a drive in this 1,000 horsepower GTR. Like, oh, that's enough.
Yeah.
That's heaps. So it's because you've got an extra couple of 1,000 RPM.
Yeah.
It makes the world of difference, which is why the RB has the edge over a JZ, as far as I'm concerned.
So aside from the oiling issues, right? But I'm sure you saw that.
There are no oiling issues. We fixed that.
So, okay, but what if you don't want to run a dry sump?
You can run a wet sump.
Okay.
You run billet gears and the head drain, and you can do all the little bits and pieces that will help you run it. But at the end of the day, you're still going to aerate oil.
Okay.
Okay, so you can run an external pump, and that will help. You can run a dry sump without an oil air separator. But eventually, you'll fill your crankcase with foamy oil.
At higher power numbers.
At higher power, higher RPM. Yeah.
So is it the RPM or is it the power?
No, it's both. It's technically okay. It's the RPM, but also it doesn't foam up as quickly without the power. So I'd say it's a combination of both, and I can't tell you how much bias one way or the
right,
other.
Right.
But you're going to fill your crankcase with airy oil, aerated oil. It's going to be foam. So unless you've got an oil accumulator, which is suggested to you today.
Like an AccuSump or something.
Yeah, which will allow the air bubbles to settle somewhat. And when you need it because your oil pressure is low, it'll inject clean, fresh, not so hot oil without as many air bubbles.
Yeah.
It's like, but you'll see it at time attack or you'll see it at roll racing when people are doing laps. It's like, all right, the fifth, sixth, seventh, your fuel's starting to get hot, your oil's getting hot, your oil's getting, your oil pressure's getting lower and lower and lower and lower. Oof. If you want to cut laps nonstop, dry sump with an oil air separator, and you can go and flog that thing all day. And it's efficient and it will never have an oiling problem and you're good to go.
So on the cast blocks that you're developing, are you still leaving the option to do a restrictor? That's pretty common.
We've changed the way the restrictor works. It's now on a thread and there's a couple of safety mechanisms in it so that you don't screw a cam tunnel because you've got oil in it.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've band-aided and fixed all of the issues. You do still restrict it, but you don't need to as much because the whole cylinder head design, it's got like a whole half of it now. The top half is for oiling.
Okay.
And then it's got big chutes down the back that connect with the block.
Oh, it's returned back to the sump.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
And then it's got a whole partition for coolant, which keeps the chambers and everything in the ports cool. So, we've efficiently fixed the oiling issue in the head as far as we're concerned.
Will there be any other modifications to maybe like the manifolds, like how they sit in the car?
The R0 cylinder head, which is still good for 2,500 horsepower if you want, that's all standard bolt up.
Okay.
The R1, we've raised the exhaust port 6 millimeters.
Okay.
There is a design for an R1 Pro, but the R1 is still a while away.
Right.
And an R1 Pro, it's a pipe dream of mine and it's got a radical manifold design that comes in like that. It's just like, you know what? If I get to go wild designing my own engine, it's like that's there. Whether or not we'll ever make it for anyone else other than our dyno room, I don't know. But if I want to make 5,000 horsepower, I don't know if that's a sellable package, but if I'm making it, there is crazy pricks in this country that will steer a 5,000 horsepower car. I mean, there's pro mods that make 5,000 horsepower.
Right.
So if you can do it with an RB and it's a lot lighter because there's a lot less engine, you know what? Maybe we'll get those things into the high fours would be epic one day, but it's like cars aren't getting any slower.
Yeah.
And, you know, 5 years ago, it's like, oh, man, you'll never go faster than 8.7s. Forget it. And now it's going to keep getting faster.
You also, I saw that you were developing or you made these billet cam caps, right? Now, you did say they work on 25 and 26 same caps, right?
20, 25, 26 are all the same.
Right. Now, 25 are more prone to cracking the cam caps. Is that true?
Nah. Look, you don't care. It's like, usually, if you break a cam in an RB or you destroy a cam cap, there's something wrong.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like there's nothing wrong with an original cam cap. They're a cast cam cap and they're porous, which means it holds oil in it, which is why a cast cylinder head has its advantages because there's a porosity in the cast and it holds the certain film of oil in the casting, which is why we've gone to a very special billet for the cam cap.
Okay.
Okay, so it's a very porous billet. It was quite hard to get to work, but
so it basically helps keep
the oil in the pores,
right?
Because it's quite rough, and you'll see when we anodize it, it's actually quite speckly. You don't get a nice finish. So a nicely anodized cam cap is a good sign that it's billet, and it's potentially there's better materials out there. Put it that way.
What would be wrong if you are cracking cam caps or something like that?
Well, usually if your head's bent, you'll crack a cam.
Okay.
Yeah. Because a cast iron sort of, or cast steel.
Yeah.
I think it's iron cam. They're straight and they don't like bending, you know? So if your head is bent, you'll crack a cam. There are billet cams out there, but then again, the issue with a billet cam is they're not porous and they are not very good at holding an oil film. Because it's quite a smooth surface. And if you're doing that in a billet head, it's like, you know, your oiling needs to be on point.
Right,
that's very unforgiving. Nothing wrong with the cast cam. We use them. I mean, you know, we're still in the fives with the cast cam. So you can induction harden a cast cam really well. Billet cams, Kilford's now starting to make a billet cam as well because they figured they were losing some market share. The reason I like a billet cam, and the only reason I like a billet cam, is if you're sticking oil gallery holes into it.
Okay.
It looks like Swiss cheese. Then you weaken a cast cam.
Okay.
So if it's an on-off type cam, which we're working on a variable cam timing system for the RB, you need four holes. And if you put four holes in through the first 3 inches of the cam, it weakens the snout. So then a billet cam is stronger for that respect.
Okay.
But also going back to the porous cam, they do hold oil in the journals better than a billet cam. So a lot of things have to be right to run billet anything.
Right.
The cast is more forgiving.
When you say porous, just for people who maybe...
There's little holes in it. There's little dents in it. If you look at it under a microscope,
right,
billet would be a very shiny, flat, smooth finish, and porous would be pitted.
Which oil can sit in.
Yeah, like the crosshatches of a cylinder. It holds oil in the crosshatches. That's why it's designed that way. Yeah.
Okay, that's pretty interesting. Now, do you think that running, like let's say a billet cam, do you have to run DLC-coated buckets maybe?
It helps running a DLC-coated bucket on anything.
Okay.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, just the deck needs to be DLC-coated, but diamond-like coating, it's actually, it offers you less friction, less heat.
Yeah.
And it's really durable and lasting. So yeah, I think a DLC-coated bucket, and if you want to get really technical, you can WPC treat the cams.
What's this?
It's a Japanese technology that gets offered. You can get it done.
Okay.
It's amazing. It gets run in a lot of Formula One and a lot of top end race stuff. But at WC, it's a treatment, but you can go on YouTube at WPC treatment and go and see the demonstrations that they do. The shit works.
What is it for? Can you elaborate a little bit on what it
it's does? Like there's a calico coating that you can get on bearings. ACL bearings come with a calico coating. Yeah. It's like a Teflon-y, very frictionless type smooth coating, which helps.
Okay.
Like a PTFE type coating. A WPC, it's kind of more a treatment where it's like an ultra fine polish. And like you can get things that just spin for minutes. If something without coating will spin for 30 seconds, something with the coating will spin for 2 minutes. So bearings get done in turbos and bearings in engines and camshafts and crankshafts and all that sort of stuff. And technically, it's less friction, less heat, labor to push it. It'd be like putting WD-40 on something.
Right.
And it's like, this got a lot easier to spin, you know?
Interesting.
And I know that you can just throw another pound of boost in things and it'll make up for it.
There's
a whole heap of stuff out there that you can go and look into and get lost with. And I've been lost in it myself, and I've got a few friends that have gone down and it's all warranted. I mean, it's all fun to go and play with, but there's tech out there. It's cool.
You mentioned a little bit before about how there's tons of LSs in the States, right?
They're everywhere.
Now you guys have a big LS market over here too.
Yeah, it's huge.
Right. And a lot of people seem to think that Australia is all GTRs because that's what we basically see in the marketing. But LS is pretty big in Australia right now.
Yeah, it's huge.
Do you plan on developing parts for the LS?
Well, man, I've thought about them, but I fucking hate them. I hate the LS one. I've done a lot of tuning back when I had my engine dyno shop, and it's just a big old inefficient engine. I mean,
Well, you said LS1 specifically, though.
Well, LS.
LS.
LS-based engine. But then again, all the Ford Coyotes and stuff, they're an efficient engine, and they've got more camshafts, and they're not just in the middle of the engine. They're actually on top. It's more developed. But, yeah, I mean, the big old Chev engine. I like a big block. I've got them in my boat. I like the way they sound. I appreciate the engine, but I don't love them enough to go and make parts for them, you know? I love this stuff. And it's like, it's where my passion is. At an LS1, it's kind of like, just everyone else is making shit for that. They can all fight over that. It's like, you know, I'd want to do it in a different way and make it really, it to be really nice parts and really expensive. And there's people already making some cool shit for them. Sean's Custom Alloys and Plasma Man. Man, I don't want to go and compete with them on an engine that I don't fucking love, really. I'd rather do stuff that I'm really passionate about, because it's like, every time we make a part, it's like, all right, can we make that better? Can we make it lighter? Can we change it? It needs to be better. How can we make it? It's pretty good, man. It's like everyone's buying it. Yeah, but it could be better. Let's do something. Let's make it look better. So
you could still do that with an LS, though. There's probably still room for improvement on the LS platform.
What are you going to do to it, man? It's got the ugly looking cam cover. And with, like, you can't, like, the coils, it's got a spark plug and it's not even a coil on plug system. It's like, man, I think those things have still got a distributor, don't they?
I think there's no camshaft
on the cylinder head. It's in the middle of the block. It's on the wrong end. There's push rods in those things.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got straws.
Yo, that's crazy. So people would argue, though, that you can probably smoke an RB with a budget LS build.
You probably can.
Yeah,
you can. And what's an LS, 6 or 7 liters now?
Oh, that's true. You got a lot more displacement.
Oh, that's a 2.6.
Yeah.
Yeah. 1,500 horsepower out of a 2.6. What do you need an LS that's going to break at 700-800 horsepower with a turbo on it? And to make 1,500 horsepower, you're building it. There's more pistons, more rods.
Yeah.
You still need a nice crank. Eh. Then you need to get the heads to flow. Mm-hmm. And then it still looks like shit.
So you don't think an LS is a good looking platform?
Not at all. I appreciate the old school Chev, like
yeah.
a 454, and there's some beautiful builds that have a mm-hmm. big blown engine coming out of the bonnet, and it's epic, right?
Yeah.
But it's big and heavy. So is the LS an efficient engine? No. And can you make it look better? It's like the VR38. You know, you asked before if we were going to make parts for it. It's like,
Yeah.
I think the VR38 needs help, but it's like, it's such an ugly engine. It's no RB.
You think it's ugly?
Yeah, I think it's ugly. Like, what are you going to do? The cam covers are, like, how do you make it look pretty? It doesn't flow. You open a bonnet on an RB. I mean, the engine was designed 30-something years ago.
Yeah.
And it's like, even the original cam covers, it's like, it's just a nice-looking engine.
That's what I say all the time. That's why.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. It's a very nice-looking engine.
Now there's pipes and shit and stuff in the way, and the VR38 and the VR38. Like, I'd want to go and change the firing order just to try and stop it sounding like cancer, man. I think so. The VR38 sounds like shit. It sounds like an RB running on 3.5 cylinders, man. It's like a preschool, you know, band.
Oh, man. That if anybody's going to say it, it's got to come from you, Herman, because I'm not trying to have nobody come for me, man.
Yeah. I love the GTR, the 35.
Yeah.
It's a cool car. I believe I had the first one or one of the first ones in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Epic car. Loved it. It's gorgeous. Yeah. But it just, it sounds okay when you're making 3,000 horsepower or 3,500 horsepower.
Yeah.
But it's like everything else, 1,500 horsepower ones, man, there's a lot of room for potential, but they just don't sound good. They don't draw a crowd. It's like, it's bad. It's an off-tune trumpet, man. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it sounds, I mean, just like a 350Z, it's kind of like that thing.
It's even worse.
Yeah. I mean, everybody knows that, though. Everybody knows it doesn't sound good. It just sounds like a trumpet. Like
so I think we should RB swap the thing.
You're going to put an RB in a R35?
It'd fix it.
Is this something that you're seriously trying to consider doing?
Yeah, I've got an old school El Camino ute. It's a HQ ute. We decided to RB swap it. And with Charlie Dixon, we were at Motorex and he had this gorgeous white one. And I fell in love with the car. We became friends. And I have a big block, blown big block for mine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's that movie that we all based our lives off? Fast and Furious. Dom Toretto's got this big blown Charger Challenger in the back mm-hmm. shed, you know, and it's angry and it does wheelies and stuff. That's the idea that I had. And then I saw this guy's white ute and I thought, I'm going to RB it. 2,000 horsepower RB. And you know what? One of the guys, Brent, that does a lot of our engine tuning and mm-hmm. building is like, why not four-wheel drive the thing? We've got a four-wheel drive package. We make axles. Let's just put a subframe into it and four-wheel drive this El Camino. It'd be epic with 2,000 horsepower. I go, you know what? You're right. So then if we're doing that, well, the 35, like the pro mods that get the shape of the car, it's just a body, right? So it's a tube chassis car. Everyone in Australia does an RB mm-hmm. in it because that's what you do here. Well, why not just get the R35 and put an RB in it and it'll sound awesome and we can still make the jam and we've got all the parts. It's like, yeah, why not? Maybe we can offer it as a kit. It'll be like...
For an El Camino.
Yeah, it's curing cancer we're going to...
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it seems like I feel like we will see a lot more RB swaps since 2J is always going everything, right?
Yeah.
It's become the new LS swap. But I think
they're like assholes. Everyone's got 1 minute.
No, seriously. Yeah. But I think when you developing the cast, I think it'll
it makes it available.
Yeah.
And you can go and put it in your Datsun or your Toyota Hilux or your whatever. You can stick it. So I want to start putting these engines because I love the platform and it works and it's efficient and it sounds nice and it makes the power and it looks cool. It's like tick, 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 tick. Can I put it in my whatever? It's like, yeah, fuck it. Why not?
Yeah.
You can put it in whatever you want. Go nuts. You know, you see Puerto Ricans sticking 2Js in a Charades. It's like, well, put an RB in the Charade now. Lariat Import International, take that JZ thing out of your yellow, your orange car and RB that thing.
He had an RB in it first.
I know. We were talking
about
it.
And then he took it out. Yeah. And then he said he ran a
790.
I didn't see that. I thought it was an A2, but 790 is really impressive. And I think it was on twins.
And then he told me that the RBs were couldn't buy any parts for it. JZs are everywhere. So he JZ swapped it.
And that's the only reason was part availability. Because when he was doing it,
no one was making stuff. He said, Herman, if you had your stuff a few years before, I love the RB. And he's got RBs and GTRs everywhere and he knows them.
Yeah.
It's like he just couldn't buy anything for it. Mm. And the blocks are hard and the heads are hard to work. And no one's got it, the tooling. It's like now, if it's off the shelf, well, you know what? People are pulling out the JZs and they're putting in RBs. Or at least it's an option. And if you're going to go build a new car, it's like, oh, well, should I do an RB or a JZ? At least you've got another choice instead of going, okay, well, it's just going to be another JZ. Yeah. In Puerto Rico, it's like there's a Pro Mod in every second garage.
Yeah.
Everything's got a JZ in it. It's like, you know what, man? Be different. Do something else.
No, 100%. That's why I put the RB into the Supra. So.
Well, I'm talking to the guy that was converted. You put an RB into a Supra.
Yeah, yeah. No, everything you said was exactly why I did it.
Yeah.
Sound, I'm not sure about efficiency because I wasn't really looking to compare the two between that.
Yeah, fair
but
enough.
But this sound and look overall, like if I would have put a 2J in there, it would never look the way it does now.
Nah, man, it looks epic.
It would not. It would never. I'm sorry. It just would not. But we'll see what happens when it's done.
It looks good now. It looks awesome.
Yeah, it looks clean and simple. Thank you. It looks clean and simple.
I do like that.
It's got a bunch of your parts in there.
I was actually surprised when I saw it. I was expecting like a beat up one of those, an A80 Supra, I think you call it.
A90. A90. Yeah.
Just a beat up one. And I wasn't expecting it to be such a nice car. And you did a nice job of painting the cam covers. And it's just like my point, the engine looks nice.
It's beautiful. I love it.
And it's nice and clean. And you can see it's an engine and it jumps out of the engine bay to me. The RB always has.
So you said that the VR38 looks terrible, right?
Yeah.
Now, they are supposed to come out with an R36, right? Yeah. Do you know anything about this?
Nissan has confirmed that they are releasing a 36.
Okay.
And they were talking between 2028 and 2030.
Oh, that's a few years from now.
And there's a potential hybrid, but at least it's going to have a V6 twin turbo, but it's not a VR. So we don't know what is, and that could change, but that's what I've heard up until now.
Right.
So I would be buying one of those cars as soon as it gets released.
And you then think it'll be worth it though, or do you think it's going to be on the fail?
Man, the 35, I thought to myself, because we brought one in for Haltech at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought at then I wasn't making parts. It'd be like, I had lots of opportunities after that when we started with PRP and prototyping all these parts. It's like, I probably should. Yeah, is it a market big enough? It's like, I don't know, man. It's like, it's not an RB platform. Right, it'll never be that big. And then you go to TX2K. It's like, okay, is there any RBs here racing? No, none. But they're all 35s or Lambos. It's like 35 Lambo, 35 Audi, Audi, 35 Lambo.
Yeah, that's it.
Lambo, 35, 35, 35, 35. There was heaps of them.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, there is no RBs here. It's all 35s. I picked the wrong horse. But obviously, now we're getting there.
So what parts do you feel like you could develop for the 35 to kind of make it better? Because there's a lot of companies already doing parts for them.
Yeah, but I'd probably work. I want to work with RTEC on it and do an epic twin turbo kit, but just change everything.
What would you change though?
Man, if I had it my way, I'd change the firing order on that car and try and fix it.
Because
your Kelford cams will make us some cams. Callies will do the crank, we'll do everything in between. And it's like, if I had it my way, I'd hot V the son of a bitch, put the turbo in the middle of the valley, change the direction of flow of the cylinder heads, change the compression ratio. I changed the firing order from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 because that's pretty to something else. And yet you could turn it on its head and make it look cool.
What would that sound like, though?
It'd have to sound better.
Nobody would know, though, right? Like, you wouldn't even know what it... You're just playing guessing games at that point to at least have an idea what it's going to sound like.
Yeah. BMWs with a hot V sound pretty good. But you could just picture some big drag cars with a big turbo in the middle of the hood.
Yeah.
And it's like all the heat stays up there and out of the way. And you could make that engine look pretty cool.
I remember RSP, he was on the podcast. He was talking about doing that. But I never got to see it. Or maybe he is running it now. But didn't really change the firing order because obviously that's just...
It's a big deal. I mean, you're making everything
different
to change the firing order. But that's what I would try and do. And look, we could just start with making cam covers and bits and pieces for it. But we're also working on the B58 platform.
B58?
Yeah.
That was not what I was expecting you to say.
Yeah.
PRP is working with B58s.
Yeah, only because our videographer Tom's got a B58 and he's been like a squeaky wheel in my ear. It's like, get out of there, man. It's like, all right, what do we need to do? So we bought an engine.
Okay.
Off ERS. They had an engine. So we got the right generation engine, which is better than the earlier engine for some reason. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And we're making a billet cam cover for it. And Artec's making a turbo kit for it. So there's room.
You talk about an ugly motor.
That
is it. I'm sorry. Anything, I'm not sure if it's a DI thing because of all the wires and stuff, and it's just terrible. That motor is ugly, but you don't really care for it like that if you're just, you know, you're there for performance. But if you can make that look fantastic.
And I get that technology is a bit that way. And
yeah.
They put wires everywhere, but when the RB was developed, they didn't put any wires over the top of it.
There's a bunch of hoses and stuff.
Yeah, but not much. It's like that B58. Try and separate it from the ugliness. It's like, it's not going to run.
Nah, that motor is not it. So if you develop something like that, that'd be really cool.
Yeah, I think so.
So what more parts do we have coming for the future? Because the B58 was a big one that I didn't even expect you to even say, honestly. Thing I thought would be
we like making parts for whatever. That's mm-hmm. cool. I obviously our passion is with the RB and we're developing the crap out of that. But I know that the Honda guys need a more reliable rear end diff setup and a transfer setup for the four-wheel drive ones.
Okay.
Because a 2,000 horsepower Honda that needs to be four-wheel drive, that's cool. So we've got a design happening for that. We've already designed the 8.8 kit for the A90 Supra.
Wait, what did you say? Hold on. Now you got my attention.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, that's it.
An 8.8 kit.
Yeah.
How much is this going to cost? Because there's already one on the market that's like $6,000.
Ours will be double that.
Double?
Yeah.
What?
Well, ours is a billet diff. And it'll be either a true track type setup with axles and crown wheel pin, a whole new setup, but complete billet with a lifetime warranty.
Why even bother with the E90 Supra? You know, the stock diff, all these records are ran on the stock diff.
I know, but I met some guys in America while I was at PRI that are breaking them already. And
really?
They're like, if we're breaking them now and we're still just working out how to turn these things up, it's like, it's going to be a thing. Everyone's going to break them.
So, at some point, that's going to be the weak point.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And the axles are beautifully made on that Supra. We could integrate them, but for now, we're making our own axle. It's like where it ends up on the hub, they've got this tricky way of splining, not through long splines, but it's like a face spline.
Yeah, 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 right.
Cool, right? I love that sort of stuff. That was awesome when we first pulled that apart. It's like, oh, that's just cool. I like it, whoever came up with that. We might integrate, but yeah, for now we'll just do a complete kit rated to 3,000 horsepower, whatever, 2,500 mm-hmm. horsepower, and let these guys go and race on it and try and break it.
And you already have a Ford kit, right?
Yep.
Now, what would you have to modify just to make it work on the E90?
We had to make a new front mount for it,
mm-hmm.
And then a rear hat, and then the diff body sits in there and then make axles.
Okay.
Pulling that diff out was a bitch.
Oh, the Supra?
Wow.
Really?
It's like it's almost quicker to pull out the whole rear end. After we did it a few times,
it became
faster. Yeah. But you got to pull all the heat shields off. The whole exhaust has got to come off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. See, it's easy now because I have all that stuff off.
You've got it off already.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the first time it's like...
There's a lot going on.
Where's the rear end?
There's a lot going on.
It's everywhere. Taking the exhaust off, it's a pretty big thing. But yeah, if you're modifying the crap out of that.
No, I just got titanium, just lightweight, you know.
Nice and simple.
Yeah. So yeah, but if I did have a bigger diff in the car, like if it was an 8.8, it would be complicated to get that exhaust to fit through with the 4-inch because there's no space if you make that bigger.
What kind of power are these things making? The normal A90?
So I think they're making around 1400.
Yeah, see, 1400, we could do an R200 kit, which would be easier to mount, smaller and more compact. Someone will run 16 and then there'll be 17, 1800 horsepower. Those diffs are going to start breaking. So,
and you can run the R200 kit on there?
Yeah, you can, but 1500 horsepower, unless it's on a spool. Mm-hmm. I mean, 1800 horsepower, no doubt, when we finish a spool, but still you're limited to the axle and the CV. So I think the 8.8 is the way to go because we're now going a 35 spline.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I don't see anyone breaking that. I think it'll go 4,000 horsepower. So we'll see.
So is there any other platforms aside from the RB, LS, B58?
Evo's, you're doing, man. Evo those things stuff. Are wicked. Yeah.
Okay. So Evo, it's weird because people are still developing parts for the Evo.
They are.
And it doesn't seem like it's that much of a popular platform. But
here, there's a bunch of workshops that dedicate their lives to them. Mix Motorsport has been doing Evos for years. There's 1400 horsepower Evos everywhere in there.
Oh, wow.
You've got ERS. They do a lot of Evos as well.
Mm-hmm.
Benchmark, they do a lot of Evos. There's heaps of companies that do Evo stuff in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a popular platform, which is why we started developing parts for them.
Yeah.
And now we cover pretty well from 1 to 10. We've got a cam cover coming for the Evo 10, but the ports on that are wicked. The engine is just very efficient. It makes jam. The 4 to 9, I mean, 1500 horsepower out of that little piece of shit is pretty impressive, right?
It is.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I know there's a lot with the Hondas as well, but we're not known for Honda stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll start with that rear diff. I know Real Street really wants us to make the diff, and there's a few guys over there that have been bugging us to do that.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll finish a lot of those projects and just see where it ends up.
And are you right now, you're supplying most of those parts for the 4Gs to Australia, or are you doing anything in the States?
Man, Australia, Europe, and the States are probably the biggest markets, but we send a lot of stuff to Japan as well. All over Europe, we send stuff to Russia, Thailand, Indonesia, you know, South America. Wow. It's really, if you put a dot on a map of everywhere we supply parts to, I don't think there's many countries we'd leave out. Aruba, Dominican Republic.
Just random companies.
Everywhere. Yeah. China, India. There's a drag racing scene in India. There's a big population, man. And there is people with money there. So, it's really interesting. Some of the places that pop up.
You also had a lot of SR20 stuff. I noticed that you guys make a lot of SR20 stuff. It's almost like anything Nissan, obviously, is a big platform.
I don't love the SR. It rattles a lot. Mm-hmm. It breaks everything, that engine. So, I mean, they can sound all right. Hammerhead was racing with one at World Time Attack. That was a pretty epic engine.
Uh-huh.
There's a couple of quick S15s with SR20s in them.
Yeah. Andrew has one, right?
Andrew's got one. Yeah. Time Attack car. Baghdad's got one. Mm-hmm. Makes 1,700 odd horsepower almost 1,800 maybe. I don't love the engine. So it's hard to make stuff for an engine that you don't love. But we are making a billet oil pump.
Okay.
For it with a trigger kit internally. And actually, the 4G63, we're releasing a billet oil pump this weekend at GTR Festival, all going well. So we are doing oil pumps for these little four-cylinder engines.
Yeah.
In that group. We needed to do the billet oil pump because they break gears, just like all the other Nissans. And JZ's now, actually. But it needed a trigger kit on the bottom. I don't like putting trigger kits on balancers because balancers move. And it's always been a problem. Even on the hub part of the balancer, balancers move and they do walk and they have a harmonic, and every now and then you get a trigger issue, and I've just avoided it ever since.
Okay. So now with the SR, you're saying it goes where?
The oil pump finishes there, mm-hmm. and there's nothing because the chain is on the inside of the engine. It's a wet chain. So there's no room. Is why you have to a balancer with teeth on it.
With the teeth on it, right.
But we've managed to sneak in a gear behind the oil pump plate cover.
Mm-hmm.
And we've put a trigger kit in there, and there's between the timing chain. As the timing chain comes in to the balancer, to the front gear, it sort of goes in between it, hidden behind the balancer, but there's a sensor there. And then obviously we do something for the top sensor and that fixes that problem. But yeah, SR's a rattly engine. You know, I don't know if we'll push it much past it. But
is it just a rattling that makes you feel like you don't like the SR20?
What happens is I don't like an engine platform until I'll make something because someone's like, you're going to sell a million of these. And it's like, you'll go and make something and then it doesn't sell. It's like, why did I could have just made another version of an RB whatever and it would have been an instant success.
Yeah.
So it's like now I will make a part for an engine and it's like, and then if that community supports the part and they're like, all right, we're going to buy this off you so that you like us enough to make more parts for this engine.
Yeah.
It's like, I can make a whatever. If it starts selling, it's like, hang on, well, let's not neglect that platform because people are actually buying it. We do sell a lot of SR coil brackets, which is why I've gone and done the billet oil pump.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like we made a R35 coil kit for a B series Honda. It's like we might sell 4 brackets a year or 10 or 12, whatever, 20 brackets a year as a kit. It's the RB. It's like, hey, man, we make 1,000 at a time. So it's like, why bother with that stuff?
Right.
But I know it's got a big following and sometimes it takes a lot of effort to get into that particular genre of engine style.
Right.
And you can't just make one part and think it's going to be an overnight success. But we just give it a little bit and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Some are better than others. And the ones that are better than others because we've got a bit more support, it shows that it's a bigger market.
Right, right.
We've got a taste. It's like, all right. It's like I know that the Yaris market is huge, the G16, right? We stocked a whole heap of turbo kits. It's like the stuff doesn't sell for us, but everyone else sells the crap out of it. We made an engine plate to wet deck to solid deck the top of the block.
Yeah.
And we've got a couple engines. We put them in a stock. It's like they don't sell. It's like, so am I going to go and make a whatever for a Yaris?
Nah.
Hell no.
It doesn't make sense.
No. All of a sudden, if you know people started buying all the stuff that we made for it, it's like, all right, now we can start looking at it. But we're just not known for it.
Right.
So the engines at least that I've got behind us here, we're known for it. It was hard to crack the 4G63, but we're there and now we're selling a lot of parts and we're R&Ding more and more of it. We do with an integrated main cap brace. It's like we released it. Nothing happened for ages. And now all of a sudden, actually, people are using them in builds and it's like, can I have another one? It's like, yeah, we made a pile, but that pile's getting slower and lower and lower.
Right, right.
It's like the integrated main cap brace for the RB. Initially, it was slow to move and we'd sell the alloy overlay one, like 10 to 1. And it's the other way around because people have had great success with it.
Right.
And the mains look immaculate when you pull it off. It's like, all right, I'm going to put one of them in. And now our big block, the R1 block, it just comes with it.
Right.
So it's already machined. You don't have to do anything. It's like $3,000 for the brace Australian.
Mm-hmm.
It's $1,000 to fit it. It's $1,000 to tunnel bore. It's $5,000's worth. You know what? For $10,000, you get it with the block.
Yeah.
You're halfway there.
Why not?
Why not?
So when you talk about developing parts for a lot of these platforms, right? How long does it take for you to make a part? Let's say if I came to you and said, hey, I want you to make different cam gears or whatever it is, anything. How long would it take?
There's so many variables, and sometimes we can develop a simple part and we can design it one day, have it on a machine the same day, cut a prototype and have it in anodizing that night, and within 24 hours we've got a completed part.
Okay.
Other times, like the lockout shifter, Ricardo, you prick.
Oh, sounds personal.
He's a funny fucker, man. He did a different meme. We had this whole 2 months worth of releasing a new product at least every day.
Yeah.
And every day he'd put up a meme bashing us about it. It was the funniest shit ever. We shared every single one of them. And now he's got in his highlights, in his profile, he's got every one that he posted. And there's Hitler memes. There was like, he took the piss. And because I've got a sense of humor, you might've realized.
Yeah.
We just laughed and laughed and laughed. And it was the best thing. So now, you know, we might release the lockout shifter, but we might not because of the fun we're having with him.
Yeah.
But that, look, there was a lot of parts as I'm steering away from where I was going. There's so many little bits and pieces. And because if it's just one part on one machine and you do one side or do another side or you make a five axis part and it's done, with a part like that where there's a main shaft, a sleeve, a body, a collar to lock out the first and reverse. Yeah. Then you've got the gear knob. Then you've got the springs, the internals. Then you've got the lockout gates for first and reverse. It's all different setups on different machines. Then the base plate, then the sleeve inside the base plate. It's just like there's 25 parts to that.
Yeah.
And they all need a different machine, different process, different. It's like, man, it takes a long time to stop machines or stop between bigger runs of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
To make it's like yesterday we made a flywheel for Mac Daddy.
That's
one of the cars that might get revealed soon. A Matuk's build. It's like to do one flywheel, it's like we're making 8.8 diffs on that machine at the moment. It's like we're making 30 of the things, right? We sell one of those a day at the moment. It's great. All day we're running. It takes a whole day to make one. It's like back to back. You do all of the op ones and then you pile them all up and then you do all of the op twos. It's like that machine's busy running that job for a month.
Yeah.
Every day. And then all of a sudden you have to stop it, take all the fixtures off that you saw because someone wanted the fuel rails skimmed with our finned look. It's like tool it down, tool it up for the new job, run the job, do it. And the flywheel might take a day of stuffing around, 2 hours to make it, and then you're putting it back on. It's like you're basically burning a $10,000 hole in your timeline for the week to make one custom part.
Right.
And that lockout shifter is like, yeah, there's 25 different parts that go on 10 different machines and it's all, you know, what
it's a lot of work.
Yeah,
it's so many,
And once we finish it, it's like, all right, all the little bits and pieces, the simple parts, we'll make 500 of them or 1,000 of them, no big deal. And the main parts, we might make a year supply with the main components and everything else. It's like, we'll make a 10-year supply. And then it just becomes an off-the-shelf part.
Yeah.
But some parts take forever, like that dry sump. It took, there was 1,000 hours of design into that.
1,000 hours. Head,
I'd say more like 6,000 hours of design into that.
For sure.
Even running the first one, all those cam covers that we make, the three-piece cam covers with baffling and it's several five-axis parts and one main body, which is a four-axis part on a million-dollar machine. It's like it's 3 weeks full time just to program the machine to run a set of those covers.
3 weeks.
Yeah. The way we make that one. The JZ cover, we made it one piece billet. It's 3 days, right? But 3 days in programming it because you want to get all the chatter marks out. You want to get it visually, you want to go and check it. Like it takes time to get all that right. It doesn't just happen. It's not automated.
Right.
So, yeah, for a simple part, you can knock it out as a prototype pretty quick, pretty rough in a day sometimes for something simple.
Yeah.
But anything with contours and more tooling, more than one tool in a machine, and the machine that makes that, there's 60 tools in it roughly to make that job, 60 different types of cutters and drills, and that main axle that goes all the way through, it's like a 30 millimeter hole and we drill it with a very big drill and it goes all the way through the ground shutters. But you've got $4,000 in tooling to make that hole happen in a hurry.
Yeah, yeah.
So all of that comes into consideration, especially if they're critical surfaces like bearing journals and stuff. The tooling is quite sensitive, expensive, hard to set up. And once it's set up, you know, you've got to keep it on tolerance, which takes a lot of stuffing around.
Right.
But to answer your question, yeah, some bits are quick and other bits that just take forever.
Are there any parts that you feel, with the RB platform specifically, that people could really benefit off of that you're still working on?
Well, having the block on the shelf.
Aside from the block, of course.
The head is the next bit that I was going to. Having heads on the shelf, you can't buy a head that makes 1,000 horsepower off the shelf. You can't buy it. It's like you can get someone to go and port it, machine it. It's got to go here. It's got to go there. It's got a stuff tunnel. You've got to go and get that specially done. It's like if we can get it all done to a point where you want 800 horsepower and that's the port design and we've proven it, it's tested. Yeah. It's like bang on you. Ryan Littoral, we gave him a head for his drift car because he couldn't keep cylinder heads on it. Herman, help me out. It's like, all right, we'll send you a head. And we quickly did a head up and it's like, here, run that. It'll make the power all day. 10,000 RPM, no problem. He's like, oh, fuck,
he's on a 26 or 25?
26.
And he had problems keeping the head on?
The head kept, you know, having issues. Yeah, cracking and...
At what power?
800, 1,000 horsepower. So we gave him a cylinder head. He beats on that thing, right? Competitive drifting. It's like it's not an easy race for an RB or any engine to go and compete in. So to have that on the shelf, whether it's 800, 1,000, 1,500 horsepower, whatever, built and done, it's like, hey, can I have a head? Because I don't have a year. It's like, yeah, man, we'll send it to you. Well, you have it in 3 days anywhere in the world. That's where it needs to be.
Yeah, stuff like that scares me. I hear like 800. Like, that's, he's having issues? Like, damn, it could happen to anybody, I guess, huh?
But then again, 800 horsepower on a circuit or drift application.
True. He's he's drifting. Probably put it revving to, who knows what he's revving to.
Well, but. Yeah, no, he revs it to 10. It's like, it's very demanding.
Yeah.
And on drag, I mean, it's only running for 6 seconds, 5, 6, 8 seconds, 10, even 10 seconds at peak load. It's like comparing an offshore boat, power boat at, you know, 1,500, 2,000 horsepower. Yeah, and they're just like full tilt unless they get airborne. They're not backing off.
Right.
Like, it's circuit racing stuff. It does hurt everything a lot faster than, than street or drag, for that matter.
Because you're beating on the car.
You're beating on it.
A good amount of time, for sure. So we have GTR Festival this weekend, which, as you guys can hear, the rain is what postponed it a little bit. So
the rain will go. The rain will clear.
So now it's Saturday and Sunday. And we will be seeing a couple of things be revealed that you said there, right? You said the 4G and RB.
Well, we've got all this stuff on display. It'll be a lot more finished.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've got a few releases, including the block. We're not going to release the lockout shifter. Fuck that guy. we've got a few surprises, heaps of new merch, heaps of merch. We're pushing really hard into that. There's heaps to see at the event. Obviously, you've got Dino Comp, you've got Show and Shine, you've got drag racing, roll racing, COTS. You've got all of the stuff that it brings.
Yeah.
There's a VIP section, which was cool last year. Andrew Hawkins will be there talking a lot. we've got some internationals. Obviously, you're here. Mighty Car Mods will be there.
Yeah.
We've got Adrian Portelli's coming up, obviously, who's the Australian superstar. We've got War GTR will be racing with him.
I want to see that. I'll get to see these cars that I've seen on social media in person.
Jordan 3's racing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, shit, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Did not know that.
That's going to be racing.
So you say racing, though. Now, a lot of these cars in these videos, they never go heads up. It's always just like a...
We don't care about that here. It's racing on the quarter mile, whether there's a car next to it or not.
Okay.
It's about racing the clock.
Okay, because I never see that. I just see like cars usually just go down the track by themselves.
There is a lot of racing with other cars.
Okay.
And there is eliminations and finals and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But most people just want to see it run a time.
Right, right.
If by chance you do get two cars, at the, like one's going to break or God forbid, crash or something. To have a race where it's a grudge match and actually make it all the way to the end, if those stars align in a final, it's the best show ever. But you don't expect it because it's rare for two cars in the same category to be competitive within a tenth against each other, potentially going for a PB or a world record, and there is a grudge where it's a to and fro situation, that sort of stuff. When Jun 2 and King 32 were racing like that and they'd be both in the final, it's like everyone's into that race. Or now you get a two pro mods when the Don and Zeus are head-to-head in a final. But like to get them both at the end, like Gas Racing Celica, Paul Mahayat behind the wheel and the Don in the other lane, and they both make it to the end. Of course, epic race. You want to see that.
Yeah.
But, man, if cars run times, everyone's doing laps and everyone's having fun and there's a show on and Anthony Mantuk does not a half track burnout, a fucking three quarter to full track burnout. Hey, don't be weak. Love that guy. He puts on a show.
Yeah.
And he does a mad burnout. He doesn't give a fuck about the tires because he puts on a show and there's smoke everywhere and everyone's cheering and the crowds, they're buzzing. It's like, hell yeah, that's what it's all about. So that's what's going
to
happen.
Are we going to see a lot of these big roll racers out there too? Because I see that's a big thing in Australia, roll racing seems
to be. There's a couple of workshops that are dedicating their lives to roll racing at the moment. B2R's one of them.
Yeah.
You'll see RHM out there putting on promoting the event. Always Mattuk wants to come and beat them and everyone wants to beat him. And he's got RR King and there's, you know, there's a bunch of cars that, that Mattuk's always brings to bring a show. So, yeah, roll racing is getting epic in Australia, and there's heaps of people that come and watch because there's always something to see in the roll race. I know Sunday night's going to be a late night. It's not going to be raining, so the heat's going to be on, and there's always something to do and see when rolls is on, and it's just an epic part of an already epic event. Cots, the last time there's already been one. It was really good turnout. And now with GTR Festival, because we did a trial of the Texas-based type, you know, on the drag strip prep track roll racing, and it was great. Heaps of people came. It's like, I think I'm going to get to drive a Lambo at roll racing this time.
You?
The Artec Lambo. I'm going to drive that against
Artec Lambo.
Yeah, against Ben, the Artec owner, in his Civic. And that Civic is going to whip me. That Civic's got 470-odd. Something kilowatts. Alex Birong tuned it. It's a Civic, front wheel drive, four wheel drive Civic with 477, and the Lambo is naturally aspirated, man. It's gonna whip. But anyway, we're gonna have some fun.
To see a Civic beat a Lambo would be pretty cool.
$30 car beat it. it's gonna be fun. But that's what racing's all about. Like, you can just bring your shit box that makes power.
Yeah.
And it's those things that you don't expect that go and make noise. It's like, what was in that? It's epic.
Are we going to see a lot more? Because there's other people who have RBs in Australia, right?
Everyone's
that
are
in like 1,700, 2,000 horsepower, right?
Man, you're going to see it'll be like 8-1 RBs. They're everywhere here. It's like if you everything's RB swapped. It's an RB industry. It's an RB world out here in Australia.
Okay. So
you'll notice it. It'll hit you in the face like a wet tuner. It's like it's everywhere.
Yeah.
So that's going to be really cool for you and all the internationals. Mickey from Throttle's out here, Mickey Andrade. Andrade, I think he pronounces it. He's a good friend of mine. I can't wait to hang out with him. Joe Cars from Japan's brought him out. So look, there's a heap of internationals that have come out, and we're going to have a good time. So. Yeah.
I'm excited.
Wait. It's going
to
be good.
I'm excited. I'm excited to be here in Australia. I am so jet lagged, but so far so good. We're going to see some more Australian things happening this weekend at GTR Festival. By the time you guys see this, GTR Festival will have already passed, but make sure you guys get your tickets for GTR Festival in the States. And that's going to be, I think, November 15th, 17th, possibly.
That's it.
I could have the dates. Oh,
It's around my birthday, which is the 13th of November, but 13th, 14th, I think was last year and this year. Look, it'll be around there. The second week of November.
Second week in November. Make sure you guys pull up the GTR Festival in Texas, and you can see Herman there with his fancy shorts, and we'll probably go out. Drinks will be on him. He will be paying for all the drinks that weekend when we go out in Texas. So
steal your credit card. You
Nah, but Herman, let the people know where to find you on Instagram, social media, and also your website so they can purchase some of your products.
PRP.world is the website.
Okay.
Instagram, Platinum Racing Products. Facebook, Platinum Racing Products as well, but fairly active on Instagram, and it's the only one of our social media platforms that I actually go and have a look. So if you ask for Herman in the comments or in the messages, you know, one out of three times I might see it, or someone will tell me to have a look there, and I don't mind, because you know, I do a little bit of doom scrolling at 3 a.m. when I can't sleep, like everyone else. But Instagram works for us. We're fairly active on that, but the website always works. And look, come and see it as an event, and come and support us by buying a t-shirt. I've got the new ones on.
That one's pretty sick.
That's cool.
Oh, you got your colors though.
We've got the colors. And we're doing all these really cool merch designs in different colors, and people are loving them. We just released kids stuff that we'll have at GTR Festival. So that stuff is available anywhere in the world, and we'll make sure we bring it all to America when we're there. But look, we freight anywhere around the world. So thank you for the support. Thank you for obviously giving us the time.
No, of course,
man. Midnight on a Wednesday night in the middle of Brookvale, which is nowhere near where you're staying.
It'd be like an hour back to the hotel, which is at the track.
Everything's an hour in Sydney.
Yeah, everything is definitely an hour. You were not lying about that. Hopefully in this rain, it'll be faster, right? But yeah, thank you for your time, man. I appreciate it. As I said before, we are in his studio. So hopefully we'll see this studio. You'll do a shop tour or a tour of it once it's completed.
Yeah.
I'm sure you'll have some cool fancy lights in here and everything lit up.
We're going to do car builds here in this studio.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to do YouTube features to showcase new parts. We're about to do a Supra with a JZ. Mm-hmm. All our new cam covers and new throttle body systems and wiring looms, wiring specialty stuff that we're working with, and a whole heap of other stuff. Twin turbo kit from Artec, a bolt-on kit. All going to get done right here. So we're going to do a full feature on that, and we're deciding whether to split it up over a few episodes mm-hmm. or just crank it out in one. But we want to make 1,100 horsepower with a stock unopened 2J. And we're going to start playing with cars like that and some of my cars. And
in the studio.
Yeah, we're going to be having some fun here.
Yeah. So I hope to see that. Can't wait to see that and see what this turns out like when you're finished with the studio.
Thank you for the support.
Until next time, if you guys are watching and listening, make sure you guys hit that like button. Make sure you guys subscribe and also make sure you guys cop some merch. And if you guys are interested in purchasing any products from Herman, make sure you guys check out his website or reach out to him on Instagram as well.
And until next time, guys, give us a comment because I love reading the comments. It's always usually fairly good. Yeah. And if it's not good, I'll read it anyway and I might give you a nice calm reply, which I do. But the comments I do love. I love the support. People say some cool things. And any feedback and any suggestions, man, bring it on.
Awesome. All right, guys. Well, catch you on the next one. Until next time, peace.
Thank you.